Very easy as a high jumper to get satisfied with less than your best. You know, I wrote down in my journal, I said, don't settle where you've been called to shine.
The Profile with Premier Christianity Magazine.
Nicolas, thank you so much for your time and accepting to answer my questions. How are you doing?
I'm doing well off a big, big day yesterday.
A massive day. It was an amazing competition that you had yesterday, a new personal record, area record, a Diamond League title champion. How does it feel for you?
Yeah, it still hasn't sunk in. I had some good trainings in July coming into it, but also we were testing out a new technique and a new programming style where I was not putting my 100% energy right at the start of the year, which is what I always do. And even though I was putting in my best, I always would feel by the end of the season that I was tired, and I really, even if physically I was in good shape, mentally and emotionally, just feeling it was hard work. So this year when we trained and we trialed everything, we tested it all out, when I had that idea with my coach to then go home in the middle of the year and then come back, I've come in and I have this freshness. And as I was feeling fresh, it feels like, in a way, I'm like, why am I so fresh right now? Have I put in enough effort for the year? But the most important is now. So yesterday, going into it, being in great shape, but then actually getting a personal best that I wanted for a long time and getting a trophy that I didn't know. I didn't know that I had such a desire for that until after holding it and being like, wow, it is special. But I also have just so much gratitude in my heart because I can put all of the effort and the training and the muscles and, you know, do all of the things, and things might just not work out. So I just see it as a gift from God that He gave the ability for all of this to come about, and I could do it with Him and for Him yesterday. And yeah, that's my feelings. Yeah.
Do you have objectives of a height in mind when you start the season, or is it not necessarily something that you put pressure on or something on?
So usually after a season, I feel like my year starts in October, not January, because October I'm in my rest, so my year starts with rest and pondering what worked in the past season. I like to write some journal notes, but also what needs to change and what I want to aim for. I love setting really high goals that seem unrealistic. That's one of my favorite things to do with my coach. The world record was broken last year, so I realized if I aim for anything less than that, I'll miss out. So I don't fear disappointment, but I have a problem of setting goals that are in comfortable positions, because I know I'll never, if you don't aim for 210, you'll never get 204. You know, if you don't aim for gold, you won't get silver. It's something that's happened in my life. So this year going into it, I realized, okay, it's after an Olympic year. Most people would have the year after as a relaxing year or a bit of a down year. And so I took this year as, well, what is really important to me, and what are we really wanting to do objectively in the sport? And I said, well, I want to jump higher than I ever have before. And I want to do that in the most important times. And so that's sort of what we've been aiming for.
Tell us the story of your journal. You started to speak a little bit about it. We see you writing a lot during competitions. Is it something that you do, like, on a daily basis, journaling and thinking and writing things, and tell us about the whole thing. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but yeah.
So my journals, as a teenager, I liked to write in journals, but it wasn't consistent. It was just a way of processing through emotions and, you know, teenage thoughts and everything. I'm like, oh, it's on paper, it makes sense. And then I remember it was 2018. I was in a university house and I saw this one girl, and she's an athlete, she's an Olympian. And after every day in training, she was writing things down, what she was doing, and she was so diligent. And I looked at her and I thought, on paper, I'm more successful than this athlete, but my mindset is nowhere near as sharp as somebody who hasn't achieved as much but is so willing. Imagine what I could do if I was willing to put in that extra effort. And so that was just a seed. And 2019, I thought, okay, I came to the end of the year and I thought, what can I change this year? And I thought, I'll write down what I do for training each day. And that was a way of thinking. I wasn't putting the bar too high, but I can do that. And really, like, my prayer has been in sport since 2017, when I just had a really big turning point in my life, that what I do, every weight that I lift, every meter that I run, everything that I do is worship unto God. It might not be the sound of my voice or on a Sunday in church every week that is the worship. It's the fact it's my life and doing something for him and with him. And so when I saw that I couldn't be bothered to do a training diary, there was a little tug at my heart going, that's interesting. So I thought I'd work on that. And anyway, within a few weeks and a few days, that habit that stayed, I did personal bests like almost immediately, which that didn't magically come from a journal, but 2019, you know, my first jump, I did a 3-centimeter PB in January. And then I made my first Diamond League in Doha. And as I walked into the stadium in Doha, I felt so overwhelmed and I wanted to be in the Diamond League for so long, and I was there and I was tired and not really prepared for it. And I did 1.85 meters that day. And as soon as I finished jumping, I had this sigh of relief that I could be on the sidelines. I didn't want to be the center of attention. I didn't want what I was actually training for. And I recognized that was wrong. There's something there that needs to change. And it was the first time I saw a sports psychologist, because I thought, I don't have the mental toolkit to be able to deal with what just happened. I've been in a place and I wasn't enjoying it, and people know me for my joy and, you know, the passion. What's going on? And so within just one phone call, he was just saying, you were in a position where it was flight or fight mode and you just wanted to run away. but, you know, those natural mechanisms, those natural things that happen, you need to find ways to combat that and fight for something that's important. So what's something that you can do and focus on during the competition? And I just remember sometimes I would see people with notebooks, and I hadn't seen it done in competition very often, but I said, well, I'm a visual learner and I really like writing down. That's how I learn. And he said, okay, well, today we're going to teach you about how to think, so mental cues during competition. And then I want you to rate it out of 10. So it's nothing to do with your emotions. It's just very, very clear of the objectivity of it, of was it a 5 out of 10? Was it a 10 out of 10? What worked well within that? What are you working on in training? And so for my next competition, I went to Europe and, you know, I saddled up my pens and my colored pencils and my notebook, and I put it in my training bag and took it to the competition, and I had so much clarity. It just all made sense, and I wasn't afraid of looking different, because I'd already made that start in 2019 of, if I'm really doing this for God, it's going to look different and I'm going to have to be outside of my comfort zone. But if I have potential and I have a gift and I'm not really using it, well, that has to change. And so that was sort of the beginning of it. And the basis of what I even did yesterday has stemmed from 2019, and now the cues look different, and something that was once like four things I work on is now seven things, and it's more elaborate, and there's paintings in there, there's training diaries. I've learned a lot. A lot of people want my journals. The people, it's a whole thing now. But the main thing is that it's been a real help for me to reach my full potential.
It helps you to focus, and did it help you to take the attention out of yourself? That's what you were saying, that when you were horrified by your emotions, how you felt about not wanting to be there, while that's what you've been training for.
Yes, well, and it's very easy as a high jumper to get satisfied with less than your best. I wrote down in my journal, I said, don't settle where you've been called to shine. And sometimes, you know, the heights are going up. Let's say you've jumped 1.95 meters. Okay, that's a good jump. Oh, there's only three girls left. Oh, well, maybe. Oh, 1.98. Oh, okay. Oh, there's no one left. Oh, it's 2 meters. Maybe I can try, maybe not. You've already won. All of those compromises come up of, you don't have to do it. You don't have to do it. Because the body, like, I'm an introvert by nature. I don't want to be out on the stand, but there's a cost associated with everything. Like, your calling will cost you your comfort. That's just, but being out there, and so this is really great for me to not get overwhelmed with excitement of a good jump and then think the work is done, but also to not get disappointed with a jump that misses a lot, because I go back to my notebook and I go, okay, but what did work? And what was good and what didn't work? And then I have the tools to then take into that next jump. Of course, my coach is there and we will compare notes afterwards. He's not rating it out of 10, but I use that alongside of what he's telling me. And most of the time now, I can really coach myself and we're completely in sync. So it's nothing new, but I can have that feedback. But even if he can't come to competitions, it's okay. I have everything written down. I know what I need to do.
Nice. You said something happened in 2017 that marked like a turnaround for you. What was that?
Yeah. So in 2017, I was 20 years of age, and I've had this dream of being a high jumper, to jump over 2 meters, since I was 8 years old. I was really tall as a young child. I stopped growing at 14 at 6'2", so much of my life and my identity was based in sport. So, and if sport was going good, then I felt good about myself. If sport was going bad, then there was no good thing that I could think about myself. There was nothing that separated my performance from me. So when people ask me, like, what do? I am an athlete. You know, it was fully encompassing. And so because of these big dreams, I had this whole life plan set out for myself. At 8 years old, can you imagine? I had everything planned out. Yep, you can go to Europe. You'll be with the best coaches that have 2 meter jumpers. You know, somebody will fall in love with you because you're a high jumper. You know, you'll have high jumping kids. Like, you know, just this whole thing. 8 years old, I had it all planned out. And for some reason, I thought that was a good option. You know, that's, and I held to it. And I got to the stage, especially when I was 20, and I had so much of that dream already unfolding before me. And I really thought that if I reached that certain place of having everything that I dreamed, that I would be satisfied. But I realized the satisfaction isn't there. And then I would be seeing people that I really looked up to, and I would see their hearts, and I realized this isn't filling them. And this gap that I had of, if a personal best was high, therefore my value was high. Well, that didn't equate to good training, because I was so fearful in competitions. I would look at the bar and I was so fearful that if it fell off, then who am I without it? Or my competitors as barriers to my success. Like it wasn't easy to celebrate other people. And of course I learned how to be satisfied in some like progress and not coming first and, you know, all of that. But I came to a point, actually, it was a crossroads in my life where I had to choose, who am I outside of sport? Am I willing to lay down my sport for something greater? And God was always like the side part of my life. He was never the center point of my life. And I was put in a situation where I did have to choose between the lifestyle I was living versus the lifestyle that God was calling me to. And it was a wrestle that took a few months to the point where I realized, you know what, this journey I'm doing with sport, it's not satisfying anyway. And my mindset is there's nothing that I'm gaining right now by holding on to it. And so I decided to lay down my sport, and I put it into the hands of God. And I thought that meant giving up sport forever. But I came to a point where I thought, this isn't satisfying me, and I know where it's found. It's in you, Jesus. Like, I know I've experienced enough to know that the life I'm living, it's not producing anything of lasting value. So here I am. And I thought that was meaning that I'd maybe be a missionary or be working in a church full time and never doing high jump again and just being a really tall girl with really springy feet, but never using that. And I thought, yeah, I came to the point where I was okay with that. But then, yeah, God said, no, I want you to go to sport, but do it my way. And I didn't know what that looked like, but I found that this message of people knowing their value and their worth outside of their performance was marked. It was like tattooed on my heart. And I just thought, I want to go into sport. And at the time, I was a 1.88 meter jumper. I never made a world team for a world senior team. Wasn't the best in my nation, barely the best in my state. Like I wasn't a promising athlete, but something that was everything to me, I laid into the hands of God. And I got so much more in return than I could possibly put into words. And when my value and the world's eyes wasn't that big, but into God's eyes, it was immeasurable. Since then, like from 2017, my personal best being 1.88 at the start of the year, within a matter of 2021, so 4 years, went from 1.88 meter to 2.02, wow. 14 centimeters. I made my first international team in 2017. I met a lot of people, and I went to that athlete hotel, and I wasn't the athlete hotel. I got called up. I was number 32 out of the 32 women that were invited to compete. I jumped 1.90 meter like 2 weeks before. I don't know how I jumped so low and got invited to represent Australia, but they let me. And I came dead last at that World Championships. I didn't clear a single bar, but I couldn't get the smile off my face because I knew who I was outside of my performance. And every day I was in the hotel, and I started doing Bible studies and prayer meetings with athletes, and I met a whole community. So every morning we'd gather together, and I was just there like, I'm a servant, like, use me, Lord, wherever it looks like. And I have these deep long-term friendships that are like family from that meeting and from those times in London that has shaped the rest of my career. And I found that when I was dead last but still serving and having the best time, even like today going to the Diamond League and being a Diamond League final winner or whatnot, and still serving and still being a part of this amazing movement where I can encourage people, and I know that my sport's not competing with my faith, but they're both like advancing and it's growing. I have such a richness of satisfaction in my heart that I never knew was possible. Like, 8-year-old me could never possibly imagine that I'd be jumping 204 whilst having the joy that I had. and not having the fear of losing anything. And yeah, I have such a strong desire for people to also experience that.
Wow. That's amazing. But yeah, it's actually transpired when we see you competing. We see your emotions. It's as if we can feel them. Like, it's amazing. Like your joy when you're before even starting, and you say something to you. What kind of thing do you say to yourself?
You know, it changes every time. But most of the time, you know, when I'm standing there, of course, let's say yesterday, multiple women over 2 meters, yesterday 202, haven't jumped that this year yet. Standing there and I'm a little bit tired. I'm really excited as well for what's going on and being there. And so I can just, but every time I step onto the field and I look at a bar that looks really high, I'm literally, it's an open prayer. And I'm like, Jesus, you live inside of me. So even though that bar looks so high, I know with you all things is possible. And I remind myself, like, I need to be the best encourager of myself, because if I'm critical and not encouraging, this body's not going to fly. So most of the time it's encouraging myself. So the last thought, sometimes I need to hear my own voice encourage me. Like, I think there's a, must be a channel or something, you know, like where I speak something out and my ears hear it. It's like, yes. And so, of course, like, you know, shouting, come on, and encouraging yourself, like reminding myself. But most of the time it is just fighting off fears with the truth that I live by. And then I get the 202 and then, all right, 204, same thing. So it changes every time because I always need something different, but always know how to encourage myself.
This August in Premier Christianity magazine, we dive into justice, music and football. Lawyer Janice Machemi talks about campaigning for the powerless, worship leader Pat Barrett on Christian music's big comeback, and Premier League legend John Bostock, who leads Ballers in God. Subscribe for 12 months at $44.99 and receive a free copy of Inspired, the best-selling book by Simon Gilbo. Sign up at premierchristianity.com.
Yeah, we can definitely feel the emotions. I was like, wow, I wonder what she's saying to herself. And at that moment, I wondered, did you say anything specific before the 204? What did you, do you remember?
You know, it's really hard to remember, but I think with the 204, it was just, yeah, you know, yesterday we were studying about when Jesus turned water into wine. That was so fun. I've never done that story before, but something that was so ordinary got transformed into something of immeasurable quality and value. And I shared with the athletes, I'm like, you might feel like you only can bring water today, something that's ordinary, and serve it, but when his presence is there and you invite him in, he can transform it. And so I think I was like, Lord, here's my water. I need you. I need you to transform my ordinary into something extraordinary. And then you laugh and you're like, yeah, well, let's see how we go. And I mean, if I look at the video, I remember that was one of them. I don't know if that was 204, but I think it was around that, maybe saying something like that to myself, having a bit of a giggle, and then jumping, and then getting it.
Wow. If you were not an athlete, what would you be?
That's a great question. You know, outside of athletics, I mean, I speak to schools and I do a few things with keynote speakings, but I suppose a lot of people wouldn't ask me to be a keynote speaker if I wasn't an athlete. So, but, you know, I studied biochemistry at university and I always wanted to be a dietitian because my family loves food. My mum's Croatian. It's just a part of the DNA of any person from Croatia. It's just food is a very central part. So I think had I not been an athlete, I might have been around within the sports sphere, talking about food with people.
Nice. And very community also in Croatia. It's about sharing and spending time together. I've got friends from Croatia. Yeah. I know food is important for
food,
sure.
Food and the noise level always just increases.
So obviously you often speak freely about your faith, and you explain to us why it is important for you. Do you pray to succeed? How did you process that? As you said, like, your faith is not in competition with your sport and what you do, but at the same time, like, you know, can we all pray to succeed? And can we all, you know, can you all win? And tell us about that.
That's great. You know, it's super fun when we'll have prayer meetings and there'll be like five people from the same race. You can't all be like, Lord, I just pray for a five-way tie today. And we all win with a world record. I mean, you know, but I've learned what is the true reward and what is the meaning of success. It's not always going to look like gold. It's not always going to look like winning or doing a personal best. Of course, we want to do the very best that we can. And so for me personally, I've had to change my idea of what success looks like. When I was, let's say 2017, coming last at World Champs, being like, wow, amen, this was great. I could serve athletes. Maybe I can just keep making teams so I can serve. But actually, I felt like the Lord really poked me and said, you actually have so much more potential than just making a team. You can lead teams. You can win, you know, make the most of the potential that you've got inside of you. So I always pray that wherever I am with my success, that I have the heart to steward the success and use the platform well and to do it well. So for me, it's more about how it's done than what's done. So when I'm in a competition where the stress is quite high, in Poland 3 weeks ago, we had a street meet in Katowice, and I missed my warm-up jumps, and then I missed the first starting height. And it was only a few days after the plane and after a really big training block in July. There were so many doubts that tried to come in of maybe you're not in shape. Like, maybe this was a bad decision. Maybe July I should have just stayed in Europe. Maybe you're not going to clear a height today. All of these, like, my coach wasn't there either, so it was just me with my thoughts. And I had a decision in that moment of, okay, do I listen to the doubts that sound very logical? Or I have a decision of putting all of that away and finding what's important, like, what is success? And I remember my second attempt at 191, I was there, that was my starting height, decided to start very high that day. And I just said, you know what, success for me today is to do things with joy. And I would rather fail with joy than jump 210 with no joy. And that was success for me. So I had, as well, the run-up wasn't working, everything was difficult. But I remember in Poland, I just lifted my hands and I said, Lord, I will rejoice today and I will praise you even in the midst of these doubts that feel so real and logical. Like, even if I come last today and I make no height, I decide in this moment I'm going to praise you regardless. And then I did that, and then I jumped high, and then I jumped the next high, and the next high. And it was a great competition, but I didn't look at the result as the success. I looked at that moment of, no, I decided to overcome that fear. So, yes, I think for success, finding the definition is important. But more than that, finding, like, where the true reward is. And if I value those moments more than gold medals and Diamond League trophies, I think it's more sustainable. Of course, I'm going to aim to those crazy heights, but at the end, my success has to be not linked to the performance.
And your identity either.
Mm.
So you spoke to us a little bit already about the prayer meeting. So tell us how it works. You share about one theme and then discuss it and then pray. How does it work?
You know, the fun thing with Jesus is that there is no formulas and life is always an adventure and crazy. We try to meet on meet day. There's been multiple sports ministries that have come through with sport. During COVID times when no chaplains were allowed, it was a bit, it was purely up to the athletes, but in a way that even advanced it even more. So it's beautiful, but a lot of the times the bare bones is that all of us in the room, like we all introduce each other if we don't know each other, and we share about what's God doing in our lives so everyone has the opportunity to share. And then we'll open up one passage of scripture or one theme, usually someone's leading, and we'll read it together and we'll just talk about it. But then we will apply it to the competition day. So today's one was talking about that we are made in the image of God. We are his workmanship and we're created in advance to do good things with him. And it was talking about how as an instrument we can be played by him. We can be in the hands and being played to do this beautiful melody. It's not just about the instrument, it's about who's playing it. So talking about like him inside of us and what does that look like when you're out there tonight? There might be a question that they'll take in of what is God wanting to display in my life tonight? And then as athletes, we come together and we pray. And the prayer is beautiful because different nationalities, different languages, different cultures, different denominations, like we all gather together and we're under this banner of one name. And you know, it's not as organized, and I think I have a real dream of that everyone would, like there would just be a place, a meeting place, everyone knows that at this time, at this day, this is where you go. But it's very spontaneous because athletes are spontaneous and track times are different, meeting rooms, but we have a community of believers and I have so many people now. Like, I can't not do a prayer meeting every competition I go to because people will say, come on, Nicola, like we need to plan it out. And others will lead as well and there's this big network. But I think it looks like a Bible study, but even if somebody is curious about faith, it can be daunting if, you know, you just want to learn about God. And if you're an athlete, potentially you haven't had the opportunity to go see a church because you're competing every weekend. Just being open enough that we can share and just pray for them. And just, I think one chaplain said to me, a lot is caught, not taught. Just with the culture, the love that is there and just wanting for them to experience who Jesus is. Just these meetings are a real fuel to the fire for the next, yeah, like the next days.
God speaks to everyone in different ways, like the ways people understand. He's got the language for each person. And I know, like, I like sports, and I know sometimes when sports things happen, God speaks to me through those things. It can sound crazy, but like, oh wow, that can explain something. Like, how does it work for you? And did you have some experience to share about that?
Yeah, you know, it's really beautiful because in Tokyo Olympics, I could have the opportunity to share my testimony, so my story, and that went viral, like all over Australia and the world. And then I had a lot of churches from everywhere wanting me to come and speak and share. And I remember before Tokyo, my pastor, like we talked and we said, look, we need to get trained up in order to how to share the gospel and how to share it confidently in front of a lot of people because he saw what was coming on my life. And so I go to a lot of churches and a lot of the times it's just sharing about what God does in sport, because other people, they learn as well about the lessons. Like, for example, my big lesson of last year was that there's this one Bible verse, it's 1 Corinthians 13, verse 7. A a lot of people in weddings, they love to read it out. And it says something like this, because every translation is different. It's all molded in my head, muddled. But like, love bears all things, believes all things. Love endures all things. And the last one, strengthens all things. I think there's four main things. But I realized with my life that when God was calling me to aim for really, really high things like a world record, I didn't have the belief in order to aim for that, because I looked at me and went, I can't believe I'm already jumping 2 meters. Like, I struggled to believe. And when I read that verse, I realized it wasn't an unbelief problem, because love believes all things. It was actually a love problem, because I thought that, like, when God had really called me on to aim for higher things, the love option was, I'm going to love him enough to believe what he says to aim for. And I'm not going to fear disappointment, and I'm not going to fear not reaching it, but I'm going to love him even in the midst of that fear. And so when I had those kinds of trainings at the Olympics, I would always go, like, with my training session, if something was fine, I found it hard to endure, well, love endures all things. So rather than going, it's a strength problem, it's actually a love problem. If I found things were unbearable, like having my life under a microscope of so many people wanting so many things, I realized it wasn't my capacity problem, it was a love problem. And I would just have a simple prayer of love. Lord, would you fill me with your love today so that I can do what you've called me to? And this belief and building it all up, when I didn't break a world record, or when I didn't get certain goals, maybe when I didn't have the strength to keep jumping, I look back and I realize that I never would have even come close to the areas of where I landed if I wasn't carried by the love of God. And the love of God wasn't just going to lead me to the Olympics. He was going to lead me through the Olympics and afterwards in life. And this love is still carrying me now, where I'm at the other side of an amazing Olympic year, but this year has just been so much more successful. And the things that I, let's say, sacrificed last year in order to try and get those extra centimeters, which didn't equate to new personal bests, that created a heart position to be satisfied and to be desiring to give my all without needing anything in return, because that's what love is. It's unconditional. So, yeah, sharing things like that with my journey in sports, I'll always have a theme every year of what God does. And then when I'm sharing in churches, especially, there'll be some young athletes there or some people that played a bit of sport, they can learn too. And it's this beautiful community that I realize my sport now is doing. It's doing a lot inside of me, but it's also doing a lot in the communities that I'm able to impact and reach with it.
Mm-hmm. Could you share one example when you felt God spoke very loudly to you through a situation in your career?
You know, I think one of the biggest learnings I had was at the 2022 Commonwealth Games. I tore my soleus muscle, so the calf muscle, in the qualifying rounds. And we had a day in between the qualifying and the finals. Even though I tore my muscle, because it was 1.80 meters to get in, I did it with a torn muscle. I didn't realize it was torn at the time. And then that was my first major injury. And then I had to sit with, do I miss the final, or do I just, God is my healer, I'm going to jump anyway with a torn muscle? And I had to sit with that process. And I had a few hours to decide before the next day where the finals was on. And I didn't know what I had just, like, victory after victory after victory. I didn't really know what I was going to do when I had that kind of disappointment. I'm like, was my faith actually real? Or was it just because I was in this thing? But when I was, you know, when I was crying and being like, this is my first major injury and all that kind of thing, my best friend, she found me and we prayed together. And I was meant to be doing a prayer meeting then, like 30 minutes after that. And I just said, God, can you give me the wisdom of what to do? And I felt, okay, yeah, I need to pull out because I actually can't jump, you know, unless I would just try and hobble over the bar. And so I did that, but rather than do like the necessary things of, well, tell the media and things, I texted people, but I said, we can't cancel the prayer meeting. I'm going to go down. So like she took me and we like hobbled down like that kilometer with like a broken thing because I wanted to go and I wanted to serve. And when I was there that day, there was this one Jamaican high jumper and I just looked at her and I prayed and I just said, I really believe you're going to get a medal tomorrow. And there was a reason why I had to get injured, because I might have taken your medal, but you need to be there and get ready. And she wasn't ranked high to get a medal, but I said, no, I really believe it, and I'm going to be at the stands tomorrow and I'm going to be with you. And and I realized my faith didn't crumble under the injury and the missing out. It actually, it became the most authentic. And then that next day when we were there and she did get the third place and she did get a medal and hobbling as well, and it was painful, but it was like the joy I had in my heart and my soul was so much more real than the pain I experienced in my body. And seeing that, and it was like, it would have been so easy just to say no, like, and just had an anger, but like for that moment God was with me and he really spoke strongly to me, even to encourage that high jumper. Like she was like, so we're doing the same time prayer tomorrow? I was like, no, because your medal ceremony is the exact same time. I need you to get your tracksuit ready. And, you know, I don't usually say that, but it was prophetic. I felt like the Holy Spirit was just speaking through me. And I realized that, let's say if I said something like that and it didn't happen, well, because we have such a strong friendship and relationship, I would have been there to cover her and encourage her, and we would have walked through disappointment together. Like, I'm not going to make a mess and then not clean it up, you know, but I really felt that. And so when I saw it with my own eyes, that's something that all the medals and trophies that I have, for me, nothing really compares to her medal, because that taught me in one of my low points that he was still sovereign and he still was the Lord of my life.
Mm-hmm. What message would you like to pass on to the younger generation?
I would say, especially the younger generation today, there's a lot of pressures. There's a lot of anxiety that's normalized. That's like, yeah, that's just the way it is. It's fast paced. But find something that you love without accolades attached to it. Something that is just pure, like a passion. Something that if you got paid zero money for, or no one else was interested in, but you love it, I would say hold on to that, because it may be a career for you in the future, or it may be something that you can always fall back on and just enjoy. Because in this world, you'll have a lot of things that were once pure, but then when fame gets in the way, or money, or other people's opinions, you lose that purity, and then you don't actually know why you started. But if you have that, hold on to that. Even if it might be drawing and you might not be a Picasso, but you'll learn how to rest and enjoy something that's pure. Because if it's pure and it's not related to grand success, but it's just for you, I think that is a real sign that God's calling you to it. And you can rest in knowing that that's going to shape you and be a comfort to you in times when life gets crazy. You can always go back to that one thing.
You've been listening to The Profile in association with Premier Christianity Magazine.
Protect your home and auto by bundling them with Progressive, and you'll have a little less to worry about. But we know you'll find other things to worry about. Like that text you just got from your boss. Hey, call me when you get a sec. 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 Yeah, this is bad. Oh, well, at least you protected your home and auto with Progressive, so you don't have to worry about that. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company affiliates and other insurers not available in all states.